Hey everyone, in this episode we're celebrating 5 years of the Next Bite podcast. We're also looking back at the 34 episodes we recorded in the year 2025, telling you about our favorites, also giving you sauce recommendations, and predicting the future of where we think technology is headed in the next year, and a little bit of corny thank yous from us at the end. So I hope you stick around to the end to listen for that. Thank you everyone for being a part of the Next Bite. Let's jump right into it.
What's up, friends? This is the Next Bite podcast, where one gentleman and one scholar explore the secret sauce behind cool tech and make it easy to understand.
What's up, folks? Welcome back to the Next Bite. This is our favorite episode of the year, usually, is our annual recap and our Saucies Awards. This is recapping our 2025 year, sharing with you some of our favorite episodes, favorite things that we've seen, that we learned, that we talked about in the last year. And then also maybe some sappy thoughts from us looking forward to the next year as well. Those are not scripted. We didn't include those in the notes. So if anything's sappy, it's completely off the dome. And I'll start with something sappy by saying thank you, everyone, for listening with us 5 years of the podcast. 239 episodes. Actually, 240 if you include episode zero.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
You have to. That's the origins, man. It started with a text conversation of us being like, hey, there's no good podcast out there for this topic. Do you want to make one? And then 2 or 3 weeks down the road, we were shooting and reshooting and reshooting and reshooting our first episode. And here we are. That's bizarre.
That was crazy. People who are listening now probably have no idea how many iterations we did on our first couple episodes. We like scripted every single exchange and then we threw it all away. And we're like, that doesn't feel like us because it wasn't us. And now we just talk and it's great.
And when you go back and you listen to them, dude, it totally, you can tell we were rookies.
Yeah.
I mean, we still are, but it's like a different realm of rookies.
Yeah.
And I remember we were doing 3 topics per episode. So we were frantically trying to figure out like, what am I going to say about this topic? And then like, what can you say? And how are we going to transition it? We got to get the transitions right. And we would stress out about all these little nuances. And now we're just like, let's have a conversation. Let's see where this goes.
And I think it's better than ever.
I would agree.
Some other overarching thoughts. We shipped 34 episodes in the year 2025. A lot of those were interviews, which are exciting. We also got at least 4 interviews that we have yet to edit and publish that we recorded in 2025. So 2025 was a big year of interviews for us. Some of those are going to bleed into 2026 from a publication perspective, but very exciting to see us go from being 2 dudes just talking about stuff that we think is interesting on our own to building something with our community. I mean, the community is really what made it most important, that folks who are actually working on those cool things are willing to come talk to us about it as opposed to us just talking into the abyss about them, which is pretty cool.
Well, we're going to get into the Saucies, but it was so cool, like, with the podcast, being able to talk to someone like Vince from ARM, where they're, like, working on policy, and you're like, oh, this is, like, I get to just directly ask all these questions that I have, and hopefully other people in the audience have the same questions that now they get answers to.
Yeah, teasing an upcoming episode release, Dylan Fox, like, CEO of a tech company whose products we use every single day. Just feel like, hey, come talk to us about the origin of your technology. What's the secret sauce behind it? We're very blessed to be where we are. And it's really just thanks to folks in the community who keep rocking with us for the last 5 years of podcast together.
And the craziest thing for me is talking to people like Dylan and then seeing their companies go absolutely to the moon. I don't know if you knew this. Assembly AI now processes 4 times the audio data that YouTube does.
Crazy.
And most of that growth has happened in the last like 2 years.
This is not investment advice. We're not an investment podcast, but being on the cutting edge of tech, you do discover some gems on their way up to the moon. Again, not investment advice. It'd be interesting if someone like indexed our podcast episodes, if you were to invest in those types of technologies and see how they do.
Boom Supersonic was episode number 1.
Yeah.
Five years ago.
Yeah. Again, we're not investors, but maybe we should be.
We got a good eye. That's what we can say.
Yeah. Well, let's not beat around the bush too much. Let's talk 34 episodes this year for Vode. We're going to highlight how many? I've got 4 awards to give away.
I got 5.
You got 5. So we're going to highlight 9 of our favorite episodes from the 34 last year. We're going to link all of those in the show notes. You guys know how this goes. We're going to give you a brief teaser on why we thought that episode was interesting and kind of our overall thoughts on where that technology is headed. But if you want to learn more, you can check those out in the show notes and listen to them. This is us taking a critical look at the last year. We already take a critical look every single week before we publish an episode saying, is this really, truly interesting, impactful technology? And then this is us taking the cream of the crop of the cream of the crop and saying, these are the ones that we think are actually notable and worth going back and listening to. We love every single episode, but if there's anything you go back and listen to, this episode's show notes is probably a great place to start. All right. Do you want to kick us off with your first award?
Yeah, let's do it. So for my first one, my first Saucy, I carried over the same themes from 2025. So number one, biggest potential is going to go to episode 227. She sells seashells and reinvents recycling. So if you remember, this one was coming out of Georgia Tech. The general idea is that there is 400 million tons of plastics that are made every single year. Most of it ends up in the oceans. And the issue we have with recycling is that when a virgin plastic goes through the recycling process, it does not come out with the same properties as the OG. So people generally don't tend to rely on it. Well, this Georgia Tech researcher was inspired by the structure of seashells, and they figured out a way to create material from recycled plastic that has the same general stiffness consistency as the OG plastics within about 93% consistency. And the variability in how much the plastic could stretch dropped by 68%. So they basically found a way to make better recycled plastics that are much more consistent in comparison to whatever else is out there. If it's more consistent, it means that engineers can use it in a way that they kind of depend on their properties and not just throw a dart at the dartboard and hope that it's going to come out right. So I had this as biggest potential because plastic pollution, especially with single-use plastics, is almost at an all-time high. And these creative solutions to make the best of what's already out there, I think, are going to play a major role in how we help our environment not be so gummed up with all this trash.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's probably only a couple schools of thought here, but most of them align on the fact that this planet's probably our best shot right now at survival. So let's try and protect this planet. There's other people who say, like, let's get to other planets too, but I don't think any planet that's within our reach right now is anywhere near as habitable as the Earth. So let's try and protect it.
I'm in that school of thought. I would agree.
Yeah. I will start off then with my first award and just a little bit of a preface here. I have 4 awards to give out. One of them is a teaser. One of them is a pleaser. One of them is a rocker, and one of them is a showstopper. So I'm going to give out each of those 4 awards. And then I also, because these are the saucies, I'm also going to connect each of those to one of my favorite sauces and explain why I think either the teaser, the pleaser, the rocker, the showstopper is the certain sauce that I drew the parallel to. So I'll start number one with my teaser, which is a technology that's not quite ready yet, but I loved that the main innovation here, the secret sauce, the thing that made it is what it is, was so overlooked. And it seems so pedestrian, and it's in every single one of our houses, or most of our houses is the microwave oven. And it's folks that looked at making maxines, M-X-E-N-E-S. They're used for radiation shielding on spacecraft in space. So these ceramics are traditionally very, very energy intensive to manufacture. They figured out that they can make it with 75% less energy and about 80% faster using the microwave oven. And they were inspired by the mechanism by which microwave popcorn is cooked. So they're using this, you know, creating this very advanced ceramics used for radiation shields. It's going to be used in advanced spacecraft in the future. And they're able to do it 75% energy reduction using a microwave oven, which is pretty crazy. That's my teaser, and I'm calling it the butter sauce. Obviously, popcorn is helping helping tie the connection there. But the secret sauce there being just using a microwave oven is a little bit overlooked. It seems a little bit plain, kind of like butter, but without butter on your popcorn, you're not excited about it. So that's my butter sauce, or the teaser, which is episode 220. And we'll link that in the show notes.
Perfect connection. You know, in the culinary world, they call the microwave Chef Mike.
Yeah.
We need like a Dr. Mike or something for the STEM realm.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on the microwaves, man. They're killer.
Yeah.
Anyways, my next one, no sauce name, unfortunately. Damn, that was smooth move from your end.
Smooth like sauce.
Smooth, I know, like butter. Smooth like butter sauce.
Yeah.
I have intersection. So obviously, we love talking about technology. Daniel and I, we come from a mechanical engineering background, but we've been so fortunate that we get to be interested and be novices in all these different types and realms of technologies, from, you know, AI to bioengineering. And every so often we get this like one perfect topic that's just a combination of everything. So for me, that one was episode 233, Reading a Fish's Mind to Build Smarter Robots. This one was focused on neural circuits. Basically, all the research done on neural circuits is confined to the brain alone. They don't really look at the rest of the body because it's difficult. These researchers were like super inspired by zebrafish because they have a translucent body. You have a lot of wiggle room to experiment with. And they created an entire neural mapping, and they used that neural engine to power a robotic version of a fish robot that they had made, and then put that algorithm in there to compare to how it would do against classical reinforcement learning patterns for navigating incoming streams of water. Basically, as water's coming in, the zebrafish is supposed to fight against it, modulate its body with the sensors it has on board. Does it do better if we mimic the brain circuitry of an existing zebrafish or by using classical learning? Shocker. The neural circuitry did way better. So you see this in like perfect combination of electrical engineering, you have artificial intelligence, you have bioengineering, and then mechanical engineering to make the body and everything work. And then, I don't know, to me, it's absolutely magical. All these disciplines coming together to basically mimic nature. How incredible is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, that got my vote for the best intersection of all the goodies.
I love it. My favorite part about that episode was that this whole thing hinges on them having translucent fish.
Zebrafish.
Zebrafish to look at the brain. If they couldn't look at the brain optically through a microscope, they wouldn't have been able to do the whole thing, which is pretty crazy and pretty exciting all at once. I will continue moving on from my teaser to the pleaser, which is episode 224, Enhanced Geothermal Systems. And this is something that we talked about on that podcast, and I think about it a lot, especially as I'm sitting here and it's like, I'm in Northern Europe right now. So it got dark really, really early. The sun's already gone and it's 4 o'clock here. And I think about how, to whatever extent we try and create renewable energy, so not based on fossil fuels, we're relying on sun or wind to produce that power. It's pretty unpredictable. You can't create energy on demand. You're at like the dismay of the elements, essentially. And there's a lot of effort being spent on how we can store that energy, because it comes in giant peaks and then it goes down to troughs. And we have pretty predictable energy consumption as human beings over a period of time. So can we store some of those peaks of solar energy and then discharge that energy later? This team in episode 224 says, let's just flip it on our heads here. Let's create energy on demand using steam engines, which is what we've been using to create energy for a long, long time, even with fossil fuels. But instead of our heat source being burning natural gas or burning coal, let's just use heat from the earth. So they're using enhanced geothermal systems. They, secret sauce here was using state-of-the-art oil drilling technology. So borrowing technology from the fossil fuel realm and saying, can we use this oil drilling technology to navigate our way to the earth's crust, where it's very, very hot, and then pump water down there and then use the steam generator from the heat in the earth's crust to turn a steam engine to create power on demand. And I liked the idea here of being basically completely geographically agnostic. So you can drill to the earth's crust anywhere. Obviously, the distance to the crust is different at different spots. So you want to be short enough to get to Earth's crust, but there aren't major geographical constraints on this. There aren't major weather constraints. Like, it doesn't matter if it's sunny or windy or cloudy. And it feels like a more plug and play replacement, or at least a plug and play supplement for a lot of the fossil fuel energy we're using right now, including you can use that same exact oil drilling technology to then go drill through the Earth's crust and use this enhanced geothermal systems energy. And the sauce analogy that I drove here is marinara sauce, right? It was our crowd pleaser. This was our most listened to episode of the year. That's episode 224. You should check that out. But marinara sauce, it's like, you know, everyone loves marinara sauce. You put it on every pasta. It isn't particularly sexy, but it's great and it gets the job done and everyone loves it.
Why not ketchup?
Some people don't like ketchup. I feel like marinara is like more... Maybe. Everyone's happy.
Okay. If you say so.
But ketchup's a good similar analogy here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if you were like a ketchup hater in hiding.
No, Nelly doesn't love ketchup.
Okay. Well,
she's not a huge vinegar person in general.
Okay. That makes sense.
But yeah. So
good to know.
Sticking with Nelly's theme here. Marinara
sauce. Respect that.
Yeah.
Shout out to Nelly. All right, moving on. Still sticking to the edibles. For me, my next saucy is the novel award. Obviously, everything that we talk about is special in its own right. But again, every now and then you come across something that's just like pretty shocking in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. For me, that goes to episode 219, which is edible robots that bring tech to the dessert table. I didn't know what to think about this when we first started looking at it, but it's absolutely fascinating. These researchers decided to use a combination of gelatin and syrup and colorants and whatever to make an edible robotic teddy bear. And the way that it was robotic was using a pneumatic system. Wild. And they then created edible rechargeable batteries, which were composed of vitamin B2, quercetin, activated carbon, and chocolate, and it was capable of powering LEDs that were on the cake. Now, this seems like, again, a little odd. Like, why would you practically make something like that? Who's asking for this? But when you peel back a layer, you understand that these seemingly silly, adventurous endeavors in technology actually allow us to uncover technological feats that have applications outside of dancing teddy bears, right? Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, it's like one of the reason people are big proponents of space programs and military programs and art programs. Correct. Outside of like their main purpose, which is to defend or to go to space or to create art. But also like in those arenas, technological developments or technological innovations are created for one purpose. They're created for art, or they're created for space, or they're created for defense. And then they end up also being remixed into these consumer versions of technology that end up impacting a lot of what we see every single day. And the microwave, as an example, similar type of discovery is like an accidental discovery made in the space realm. And then they're also like, oh, shoot, we can use this for cooking food and for making radiation shields. So that what gets me excited about this is like, let's use the constraints of the culinary arts, of like trying to make robotics that are edible. I'm sure that there are knock-on effects from this, accidental discoveries from this type of innovation that then make their way to industry or make their way to consumer or make their way to commercial places where like they make a broad impact. And then the funny origin story will be like, we tried to make a robotic teddy bear that was edible.
Absolutely. And just, I mean, think about the applications of a biocompatible dissolvable battery for wearables or whatever. So that's going to take my vote for novel. Obviously, you and I, we love the culinary arts. So that's a factor in my decision, but definitely one of the most interesting and unique applications of technology that I think we talked about this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to follow that up with something that's not edible, which is my rocker. And that's episode 210. Which is origami concrete. And the overarching theme here is that concrete takes a long time to set up. It takes a lot of material. And one of the challenges there is that it takes so much material because concrete needs to be reinforced. And when you use a lot of material, you create a lot of emissions, and it's relatively inefficient from a pure like manufacturing perspective of manufacturing new buildings. And I'm calling it the rocker because it's concrete. But also, one of the exciting things here is they were inspired by origami. And the best way to explain it is like to intuit anyone who's folded a sheet of paper into a fan, and I've got a sheet of paper in my hand, like it's very loose and wobbly and it can't structurally support anything. But if you fold it back and forth like a fan, it gains this structural rigidity and it doesn't need to be reinforced by external reinforcements to make the sheet of paper strong. If you corrugate a sheet of paper, you get something strong like cardboard. And we use these cardboard boxes to carry stuff around all the time. And we put stuff in concrete or cardboard boxes and ship them around the world and expect stuff to be safe. And so very similarly, origami-inspired fan shapes were being used as molds in the pouring of these concrete. And you're able to massively reduce the amount of material that's used. You're able to speed up the curing time, which is awesome because it makes buildings be able to be constructed faster, reduce the amount of waste. And in this case, the concrete becomes self-reinforcing, which is really, really exciting. And the sauce name here that I chose for episode 210 is wasabi. And it's the explanation I'm going to draw here is origami, wasabi, both Japanese. Concrete,
like it.
Wasabi. They both don't look that exciting from the outside. But if you take a bite of wasabi, it's spicy. It'll get you. And very similarly, this origami concrete may not look that exciting from the outside. But when you take a look at the fact that they're able to use less material, make it self-reinforcing, make building construction happen faster, and at the end of the day, it looks prettier too, that's pretty spicy and pretty exciting too.
I gotta say, for a seemingly boring material, concrete, it is interesting that it's come up, I think, in both of the last saucies. It makes sense, I guess. It's an important part of our daily lives. It accounts for a decent amount of emissions, and it can act as a bottleneck for new construction. Yeah. So,
and who knew, after thousands of years of using concretes or similar mixes, we're still innovating.
I know. Look at us.
I know.
My next one, it's personal favorite, 226, stop and go no more, AI cuts intersection emissions. So, where Daniel and I live, Northern Virginia, kind of known for traffic. I absolutely hate traffic. I don't think anyone likes traffic, but like, I really hate traffic. And this combined team of superstars from MIT, ETH Zurich, and the Utah Department of Transportation, they came together and they talked about this idea of eco-transportation, right? Like, what if cars could kind of be in sync together so that we prevent bottlenecks happening at different intersections? And a lot of them were like, no one has really looked at if we should do this. Everyone's looked at how we should do this. So we're just going to take a step back and see what would be the impact of if we were able to accomplish something of this sort. The long and short of it, they said that a full rollout of every car on the streets having this eco-transportation system set up where they can be in sync would result in a total reduction of emissions to the tune of 11 to 22%. Already massive there.
Yeah, crazy.
But more interesting was the statistic that even if only 10% of the cars on the road adopted this technology, that would still result in a reduction of 25 to 50%, especially in regions where there's a lot of stop and go, like the cities. So to me, one, I'm like, less traffic, less slowdown, bless. That's already a massive achievement for me. But the fact that a tenth of the cars adopting this technology could still reduce emissions by, 5 to 10% globally, that's incredible. So it was like a win-win situation, had a little bit of artificial intelligence, had a good moment of, let's just take a step back and see if this is actually important instead of just sending it. So yeah, personal favorite.
Yeah, me too, man. It's really exciting. And one of the things I think about is when you say like, what percentage of cars on the road do you need to achieve critical mass to where you can start to reap some of these benefits? Obviously, like, the emissions are really important. Also, like, as people, we like to get to places in a timely manner. Having the traffic reduction is also a huge deal too. And so I started thinking about, like, do any car manufacturers have enough road share of active cars with the capability to be able to do, like, an over-the-air update with something like this to be able to, like, achieve that critical mass? And the answer right now is no. But I think in certain cities, we might start to get there. Tesla accounts for about 40 to 50% of the world's EV shares or EV sales right now. So maybe Tesla can get there as, like, EV adoption starts to take hold. But number of registered cars in the US, Tesla is like less than 2%. So we're not there yet. But if a coalition of auto manufacturers want to come together and say, hey, we can all OTA this type of, like, collaborative technology to get rid of stop and go traffic, to reduce emissions, and if everyone collaborates together, we can achieve this, I think we can get to 10%.
I agree. And I think that's why research like this is valuable, because it shows the potential that's out there if we can get people to just come together.
Yeah, well, and then it ties back to some other discussions we've had on the podcast around, like, I think there's, people broadly think of, like, technology, academia, they think of government as one of these bodies that interacts with that as well. There's also standards organizations, which are not part of government, but they do a good job of, like, collecting inputs from all three of those. And, like, making sure that there are standards that everyone agrees on. I think we on this podcast have had a number of episodes about or related to or in collaboration with SAE. SAE International would be a perfect collaborator to try and bring together a lot of these different automakers and bring together regulators and bring together academia and see if there's, like, some way of achieving this at least 10% adoption on the road and getting to a place where we can start to drive more and more adoption and reap more and more benefits from a traffic and emissions perspective as well.
Great call. Absolutely.
You know, we're just connecting dots here on the podcast.
And making bold predictions about the future.
Yeah. Well, you know, with 239 episodes, you're blind squirrel finds a nut even sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My last one is my showstopper. My personal favorite.
Hit me with it.
My personal favorite episode from the year, which is episode 237. And I am aware that recency bias is probably playing into this. But it feels like an awesome like confluence of a lot of different things that I've been working on in my career, passion projects, and then things that we're working on now. And then also it kind of ties into my overarching thoughts about what 2025 looked like from a technology perspective and what the tech landscape might look like in 2026 and moving forward. Vibe manufacturing is my shorthand for the episode 237, which was a team from MIT orchestrating a lot of existing tools that already exist in the stack, voice to text,
text to CAD,
CAD to CAM, CAM to automated manufacturing, right? But then they orchestrated all these existing tools, fused them into one stack together to where you can basically be like, Jarvis, make me a water bottle. And then that voice is translated into text that an LLM can understand. That LLM turns your text into a CAD, a 3D design. And then it also talks, it creates that, or turns that 3D design into a toolpath for robotic manufacturing to be able to understand what it needs to do to achieve that 3D design. And then it goes and tells robots to go do it, and it does it. And they did it with, like, reconfigurable magnetic pieces. And they were able to basically create and recreate different types of furniture, which is obviously very exciting, and it's a cool demonstration of it. But we got excited about when you start to mix in different means of manufacturing into the mix as well. Mm-hmm. Can you put CNC machining in the mix? Can you put additive manufacturing in the mix? Can you put welding in the mix or surface finishing and painting and get to a point where, like, you could be like, I want a stainless steel water bottle, and you just say it out loud. And then this complete end-to-end vibe manufacturing solution, like the way that people do vibe coding right now. It was a PR stunt, but I saw a guy that vibe coded an app completely with voice to text using the app Super Whisper while he was running a marathon. So like while running a marathon, completely just used his voice to vibe code an entire app while running, which is cool. But like we've got to a point now where people can just use their voice to make software. You can just speak and you make software out of thin air. This is the manufacturing renaissance, something I'm excited about. This is like the vibe manufacturing future of being able to fuse these state-of-the-art AI tools that we've been seeing people talk a lot about in the realm of software. See if we can apply these in the realm, the physical realm of hardware and physical manufacturing, and see if we can make a difference there as well.
I told you right before the call started, I looked at this, I was going to pick it, but I was like, he's definitely going to pick it. This is his bread and butter.
You read me like a book, man. And I will give my my sauce analogy here. I think this is mole, which is like, I think one of the best sauces ever. Fuses like 20 different ingredients to make this like really cohesive, complex flavor that tastes good. This is the vibe manufacturing for me. They're fusing all these different existing tools into this orchestrated, beautiful solution that I think tastes good. I'm excited to see where this progresses. Obviously, it's a limited demonstration so far, but I trust if there's any university in the world I trust to try and make something like this happen, it's MIT. So I'm grateful that this is in their hands.
I totally thought you were going to call this the ranch episode.
Yeah, it would be good. It would be good for ranch, but...
But mole is strong. The justification makes sense.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, on to my last one. This one's just an honorable mention. Something that I think most of our listeners probably never even think about, but 212 was about the one cure for all snake venoms via AI. The stats were super shocking to me. 2 to 3 million people get bit by snakes every year, according to the World Health Organization. There's still 100,000 deaths every year, 300,000 disabilities. Absolutely shocking. I did not know that snake bites are still such a big problem. And they talk about this, like, what is it? The three finger venom. There we go. It's like this family of venoms, and the difficulty for designing antidotes based on like a case-by-case basis, essentially. And what this team was able to do was leverage deep learning for the protein design tool that then determines the best combination to neutralize the toxin found in the snake venom. And then that offloads a significant amount of the work from the team so that all they have to do is just create that venom antidote and then verify it in the lab. So the amount of impact this can have is massive, especially given the fact that most of these incidents happen in regions where hospitals are not super accessible, and the setup that they have supposedly makes it, again, the offloading happens, the research happens elsewhere. All you have to do is the mixing on site. So I don't know, something that I don't usually think about on a day-to-day basis, but I'm happy someone else is tackling.
Well, we're fortunate we don't live in a geography where it's a high likelihood that we get bit by a snake. And if we do, there's not anti-venom available. But that's a very real reality for probably billions of people in the world.
Yeah.
At least hundreds of millions, if not billions of people in the world, wake up every day saying, I might get bit by a snake today, and there may not be an antidote available for that venom. This has massive potential impact.
That's why I got the honorable mention.
Yeah, I love it. I
have to bring it up.
So some summative thoughts here from me. Thinking to what I said in our 2024 recap, or the same episode at the beginning of 2025, I spoke about how we saw AI developments broadly across a lot of different domains, but those were mainly in like very AI-friendly realms. And a lot of those were like what we covered in the podcast was like the AI developments themselves. Like we talked about this new type of like machine learning model doing something different, more efficiently or faster than what we've seen before. And it was like the development of that technological foundation. And the prediction I made at the beginning of 2025 was that we're going to start to see this application start to take place in a lot of adjacent domains where there's low-hanging fruit. And one of the things I think of is like in the medical realm where there's already a lot of digital imaging, we've been able to use AI to help with diagnosis. And we've also been able to use AI to help with lots of different things. Almost every single episode we talked about today in our recap, we kind of saw that prediction come to fruition, which is like even things that weren't an AI focused development, even if you're talking about things like this is a construction development, I'm using origami concrete. They're using AI tools as a part of their development, as a part of their research to improve the way that they're working on things. And some of these researches, it's like a core critical part of what we're talking about, like finding antidotes for snake venom. Some of them, it's just like an auxiliary tool that they used as a part of their research process. But I was really excited this year to see AI applications in realms with low-hanging fruit to be able to like actually get applied. And we see like a big practical difference in the way, the velocity with which engineers and researchers are able to develop new technology using AI. That's very exciting. My prediction looking forward to 2026 relates a lot to my showstopper, which is episode 237. I think we're going to start to see AI-ification the same way that we saw on these low-hanging fruits, the same way that we saw vibe coding of software become a reality for lots of software engineers. I think we're going to start to see AI-ification of old, challenging, not low-hanging fruit, really, really complex environments. Some of these where people are willing to push forward and see a lot, like see things come to fruition, are willing to do orchestration of a lot of different AI systems. They're going to be able to solve more complex problems in domains that don't seem AI friendly. And vibe manufacturing is a perfect example of that. You would say manufacturing is really complex. We haven't even been able to automate a lot of it with robots because we still need humans to deal with a lot of the different complexity. And when we think of manufacturing, when we think of factories, we think of machines, but we also think of lots of humans sitting there working. And we've had to use humans because we weren't able to use existing technology to automate a lot of that. And so the developments we saw in 2025 were like, let's use AI to make existing technology better where we already have automation. What I'm looking for in 2026 is like, is AI and the auxiliary systems, is it becoming robust enough that we can start to use it for the more challenging environments? And in places like manufacturing, I think there are very practical areas where we can use it. And I'm looking forward to seeing this type of development in 2026 as well.
Don't remember what I predicted last year. But it is interesting because my predictions of this year are slightly different than yours.
Okay, hit me.
I think 2026 is going to be the start of the downturn in terms of AI adoption. We already know that big companies are like Salesforce that were super in on AI agents are actually reverting because it hasn't been paying off and the models are not maturing as they intended to. I think that the cost of compute is not going the way that it should be, and it's still an uphill battle. I think there will be certain niche applications in certain domains. Like I think vibe coding for engineering is here to stay. I think vibe manufacturing is going to continue to grow, but the masses, I think, are going to start going towards AI veganism, let's say. That's my general sense on the AI realm. But I think what will get a lot of attention in the coming year is going to be energy. Across the board, we're seeing energy crisis, not just for AI, but just for residential as well. Our demands are ever growing and we've yet to crack something better. Everyone's trying to go in on green energy. In some places it works, in some places it just can't scale. This enhanced geothermal was really interesting for me for that reason. On the road to crack fusion, if it's next year or if it's always the next 20 years, we need to have something better. And
don't worry, man. Fusion's prediction. Just 5 years away.
It's just 5 years away. Always 5 years away.
Yeah.
But I think we're probably going to see more nuclear across the board, even if it's fission, because I can't imagine a different way to keep up with our demands.
Yeah. No, me neither. Like just truly first principles perspectives. Fusion or fusion adjacent technologies feel like the way forward. And I'm including solar in that as fusion adjacent because the sun is, really? So the sun is a giant fusion reactor and we're just collecting the emitted energy that comes off of that. Yeah, thank you. But yeah, really grateful for everyone as a part of our community. For participating as a part of the Next Bite. You guys make this all possible. You make it possible for us to do cool things like go fly to Mouser's distribution center in Mansfield, Texas, and look at all their state-of-the-art technology, which we've got some awesome episodes coming out related to that visit in the next couple of weeks. And so many more cool things that we're doing. And I want to give like one really, really quick heartfelt thank you to everyone for giving Farbod and I a reason to continue to be friends and buddies and talk every single week. One of our dreams for a long time, ever since we were in school, was like, will we ever have the opportunity to work on something together? Working on something together has been the podcast for a little while, but we've also, in the last year, in 2025, we both left our cushy 9-to-5 day jobs and went and like started a startup together, which is really exciting too. And I'd like to give some credit to the podcast for keeping us in each other's orbit, keeping us building that chemistry, working on things together. And now we get to work on things together for our day job as well as our night job, which is pretty fun.
The next bite after dark, man. It's a great time.
Yeah. The next bite around the clock.
I'm going to echo what you said. I'm always blown away looking at our audience and how many countries people tune in on listening week after week. Forever grateful that you decide to give us those valuable minutes of your life again, week after week. I don't know what we did to earn it, but we'll work hard to keep it. People set goals for the new year. I've never been a fan of doing that, but one goal I'd like to set is double the interviews that we did in 2025. I've been loving the interviews. The listeners have been loving the interviews. And they're such a great way for us to amplify our original mission statement, which is taking interesting, cool events happening in the tech and STEM realm and then bringing it to the masses. So I don't know how many. Did we do 5 this year? 5 or 6?
We'll have to count and then keep ourselves accountable.
Yeah, double that. That's the goal I like to set for us.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. I like your goal. I don't have a goal for us, but what I did bring is some statistics that I want to share with everyone to thank everyone for being a part of the journey over the last year. Looking at our Spotify Wrapped right now, 2025, total audience grew by 12%. Total new audience grew 999% year over year. So last year, we added a lot more new listeners. Basically 10 times more than we ever have. And we reached 36 different countries overall. Thank you to people across 36 different countries in the world for listening to the Next Bite podcast. Lots of folks ask how they can help us keep doing what we're doing. It's pretty simple. Just share this with a friend. Like this, if you think someone will think this is interesting, share this with a friend. And if you have any thoughts on how we can do this better, let us know. Like that's truly the two things you can do to help us. We're really grateful for everyone being a part of the audience so far, making all this possible. And we're looking forward to another great year together.
Killer, man. I got nothing else to say. Happy 2026, folks.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you, everyone. That's the pod.
Did you like this episode? Great. Make sure you share it with a friend, because friends don't let friends miss an episode of The Next Bite. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.